Welcome to the I-29 Moo U Dairy Podcast. The I-29 Moo University is a consortium of the land-grant universities located in Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska. This podcast covers timely news, information, and research for today's dairy industry.
Welcome to the I-29 Moo University Podcast. For those who haven't heard my voice on here before, I am Madison Kavarna, a beef nutrition field specialist based out of Watertown, South Dakota, with SDSU Extension. For my debut run here, I'm pleased to share that Sarah Erickson is joining me. I will give her a few moments to tell us more about herself, but I will kind of start her off with Sarah is the data advisor on the animal health team with TELUS Agriculture. She's been a frequent flyer as of lately with the I-29 Moo University, but we just can't get enough of the knowledge and wisdom she has to share. Today, though, I'm going to pick her brain about foot health in the feed yard, and I'm sure we're going to have an awesome and engaging conversation. Sarah, I do want to give you a few moments, like I just mentioned, to introduce yourself to our listeners, such as like, what do you do for work? Where are you from? And maybe even how you found yourself in the foot health space.
Thanks, Madison. So to start off, I work for TELUS Agriculture. I've been with this company for over 7 years now. I originally started in 2018 when it was formerly Feedlot Health Management Services after I finished my undergrad. I completed my master's degree while working with Feedlot Health. I began that in 2019, and then with COVID and everything, it ended up taking a little bit longer, but nonetheless, that is how I was first introduced to the foot health field, as my master's degree was based in epidemiology and more specifically looking at hoof-related lameness in feedlot cattle. I'm from Western Canada, more specifically Alberta, and yeah, I don't know what else you want to know. Maybe I should turn around and slow that down again, but...
No, that was awesome. It's just kind of it's nice to hear a personal viewpoint on the speaker who came in, and not just, you know, people sometimes may think that, you know, I find all of the information, but it's always interesting to see what everybody shares about themselves and kind of how they find themselves where they're at. So no, I think you did perfectly fine, and it's always a joy to kind of listen to you talk about this foot health and hoof related lameness topics, because it is something that we tend to see in a feedlot, you know, more frequently than I'm sure some of us want to ever see it. And on that topic, you know, one thing I know a lot of us in the fed cattle industry and the feeding industry can be guilty of is seeing a lame animal out in the yard, and immediately, you know, that thought runs through your head, oh, it must be foot rot, better bring him in to treat it. You know, that's kind of our knee-jerk reaction. The thing we blame it on is foot rot. But what are some ways that we can identify these hoof and foot problems further rather than just assuming it's foot rot? Is there any other telltale symptoms of these other, you know, hoof-related illnesses that we can kind of pick apart as we bring him in to be treated?
Yeah, for sure. So you're absolutely right. Foot rot is the number one diagnosed, and I'll, you know, say that loosely, as you know, you alluded to, a lot of these are misdiagnosed as foot rot. Generally speaking, even in the literature, we're seeing anywhere from 40% to 90% of cases being attributed to foot rot. So that's a huge range, which tells us that there's more likely than not other diagnoses that are playing into that. And so the other ones that we do commonly see include digital dermatitis, toe tip necrosis syndrome, and laminitis. So all those three plus foot rot tend to be localized to the hoof or the lower limb. Obviously, there are different factors that play into each of those diseases, but there are a few things that we can look at that really help us figure out whether or not these are foot rot cases. Toe tip necrosis syndrome is probably one of the easier ones to identify, because the animals literally do kind of toe tip, like they're really light on their toes. Generally, this is on the hind feet. And really importantly with toe tip necrosis syndrome, it happens early in the feeding period. And so it's highly associated with what we call the abrasion theory, which is how hard surfaces such as concrete or metal through the chute system can cause abrasion on the hoof and lead to breaking at the white line of the hoof, which then allows bacteria to enter and cause the infection. And so we think about that in terms of when those animals are exposed to those handling systems in the feeding period. Generally speaking, that's very early days on feed. And so if you see animals that are walking very tipped up on their hind legs, very cow-hocked, and early in the feeding period or early days on feed, generally speaking, it's probably a good indication that maybe it's not foot rot. The other thing we can look for with toe-tip necrosis syndrome is, generally speaking, there's not swelling in the lower limb. Whereas foot rot, that's a very classical sign of foot rot, is there's a lot of swelling around the pastern and fetlock, and often in between the claws of the hoof. And so that's kind of number one, being able to differentiate early in the feeding period. When we look at digital dermatitis and laminitis, both of these diseases tend to happen more commonly later in the feeding period. So we're talking about, 150 days on feed and up. And so it's actually really important to be able to differentiate in between those two, because they happen similarly in the feeding period time-wise. But as far as differentiating them from foot rot, again, we're going to be looking for the absence of that swelling in the lower limb. And foot rot also tends to have a really strong foul odor associated with it. So you can think about that stuff too when you're bringing animals through the chute. But unfortunately, the number one best way to differentiate of whether or not you're dealing with a foot rot case or a digital dermatitis case is to actually lift the hoof up. So we have feedlots that have implemented something like a winch system or even just a rope system, and using, kind of physical strength to be able to lift the foot up, clean the foot off, whether that's with paper towel or whether you're able to hose that foot off and actually view the lesions that are on the bottom of the hoof. And so obviously that's a big time commitment and something that's not always feasible. But if feedlots are dealing with an outbreak of lameness and they're not really being able to resolve it, treating it as we would treat, conventional foot rot cases, usually that's the next step we take, is okay, we need to actually be lifting these feet up and confirming whether or not there is foot rot present, because it might be a different disease entirely. And digital dermatitis is a really good example of one where we would normally treat foot rot with systemic antibiotics, and usually that works just fine. Whereas with digital dermatitis, we actually want to use a topical antibiotic. So if you're treating animals that have digital dermatitis cases with systemic antibiotics, thinking that they're foot rot, chances are those lesions aren't going to resolve. And laminitis is its own, ball of wax. And generally speaking, there isn't necessarily a treatment per se for laminitis. This is a metabolic disease associated with being on high-grain diets. And this is also, tends to be part of the reason why we see it more commonly at later days on feed, because those animals have been on that high-grain diet for a longer period of time. And some of the differentiators for laminitis versus foot rot is mainly looking at, again, we can look at the lack of swelling in the joint and that kind of thing, but also looking at the incidence in the pen. So foot rot tends to be a very highly infectious disease. And so this isn't something where, I mean, laminitis, given that it's metabolic, is not infectious. And so you won't often see multiple cases popping up all at once. Whereas with foot rot, it's very common to see more multiple lame animals, and those numbers increasing quite rapidly within the pen. So that can kind of help as well. But generally speaking, those foot rot cases, we do see them throughout the feeding period. And yeah, being able to differentiate between those different types of lameness is really important in being able to prevent them from happening and managing those cases that are arising.
One thing that you mentioned that, I grew up on a family cow calf and a 200 head feedlot operation in northwest Iowa. And the thing that was interesting that you mentioned here was the fact of there is kind of that days on feed component to, how these different diseases come into play, or how, they affect animals, such as that laminitis typically is that later in the feeding period illness that you might find in these calves and these steers and heifers as we get further out. And I think that's a helpful tip to keep kind of in the back of our minds as producers, as we have this Rolodex of all of these things we need to be looking for no matter what time we are feeding cattle or how long they've been with us. We've got all of these things we need to keep on our minds and kind of, labeling it where these different diseases are. We're not all trained veterinarians, but we can all kind of remember generic time frames where these different things come into play. So I really appreciated that she kind of brought in some of that information too with it, just to kind of make little mental notes for ourselves as we go forward, as we bring cattle in and get cattle out and those type of things. In terms of talking about diseases, you mentioned the digital dermatitis, toe tip necrosis, laminitis, and then we, of course, mentioned foot rot. We can't talk about foot health and that one not come up. But have you noticed, kind of in your experience, in this area, any differences in breeds in terms of foot health? Or is it that 50-50 chance of the cards you'll get dealt, no matter what breeds you bring in? Or even we can bring in some of these dairy crosses as well. Do you see any kind of differences in susceptibility? That's the word, to these foot health issues that we see?
That's a really good question. Honestly, not a whole lot. We actually see the most differences are in sex. So, especially when we're looking at laminitis cases and digital dermatitis cases, we tend to see more of those in heifers than we do in steers. But when it comes to breed, the analysis that we did for my master's project was looking at a whole bunch of different risk factors for cattle placed in Western Canada and determining whether or not those risk factors were anything associated with the outcome of becoming lame, whether it be foot rot, toe tip necrosis syndrome, or digital dermatitis. And one of the big things that we looked at was the difference between beef animals and dairy animals. And part of the reason being there is that digital dermatitis is endemic in the dairy industry, so it's a super common disease there, as many likely know. And so part of the speculation that arose from that is that, oh, dairy cattle brought the digital dermatitis into the feedlot. They're the ones to blame, kind of thing. And so, of course, we wanted to look into that and see whether or not there was any association with, being a beef animal versus a dairy animal and the outcome of getting digital dermatitis or being diagnosed with it, rather. And yeah, we ended up finding nothing. And so part of the thing that we started thinking about beyond that was how the dairy industry incorporates into the feedlot industry. So I think in the situation where if you have older, more mature dairy animals that have actually spent time on a dairy operation, then chances are they could be bringing that disease into the feedlot with them. But there's not a whole, like that's not a very large population of animals coming from the dairies at later ages. So, it's kind of your cull cows and things like that. But the majority of cattle that are coming from dairies that are getting placed into feedlots, or as you mentioned, the beef on dairy populations that are, steadily increasing in numbers as that becomes a more popular option, those calves actually don't spend much time on the dairy itself. Like they're, day-old calves when they're taken from the dairy and placed in a calf ranch, and they spend the rest of the time in the calf ranch prior to being shipped to the feedlot. So our speculation is that the likelihood of them actually coming in contact with digital dermatitis on that one day of their life at the dairy and then being able to bring it into the feedlot with them is pretty slim. So yeah, I mean, long story short, really, no, we haven't noticed a lot of difference in breed.
It's interesting that you brought up that the most differences are between those steers and heifers, as if we I always find it so funny of how much of different beasts steers are than heifers once we get into the feeding sector of the industry. And it's interesting that they kind of get one more separation too, even all the way down to the foot. We get all the way down to the ground, and even their feet and kind of things that they run into there are a little different. So that was interesting for me, and it's something that, we maybe see, but I mean, I've never made the connection. So that's kind of cool that that's where we see most of the difference versus, the breed side of things, or kind of those crosses as well, or at least things that we've been able to kind of iron out in terms of actually looking at it. But speaking of ironing things out, I know a lot of agriculturalists and a lot of feedlot managers and just feedlot people, or producers, those type of things, are kind of curious about the economics of this foot health issue and these epidemics of all of these different things that can kind of come in and out of a feed yard and all of those different types of things. And I know in past times that I've heard you speak on foot health that you've got some numbers and studies up your sleeve that we can chat about. But from my understanding, and I mean where you're from too in Canada, that they might not be the most applicable to our producers here across the border, but I think they definitely still paint a picture that's worth sharing. So would you want to kind of shed some light on maybe those numbers and studies that you've done up there in Canada with us, just to kind of gloss over this economics issue that presents itself?
Yeah, of course. And like you said, the caveat here is that, some of the numbers that I'll be talking about are from Western Canadian studies. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't applicable. You just have to keep in mind that there are some differences in the industry and differences in placement periods, and then just, those factors can play a role in how the economics are affected. By and large, we are seeing that for an animal to reach a finishing weight of about 1,400 pounds, generally speaking, that's costing about $520, and that is US dollars, for the producer to get that animal to reach that finishing weight. And that's a pretty standard number for a healthy animal. When we start looking at cases of foot-related lameness, it can increase anywhere from about 630 to upwards of $1,500 per animal, for them to reach that same finishing weight, or for them to even reach a railing weight in which they're, heavy enough that they're able to be shipped. And so some of the factors that play into that, I mean, that's obviously a big range. There's almost a $1,000 difference there, from the low end to the high end of how that economic number can be affected. And what really plays into there is the diagnosis. So if we think about the late days on feed digital dermatitis cases, or even late days on feed foot rot cases, and our laminitis animals, those animals are already at a heavier weight, theoretically, or they should be because they're later days on feed. And so the cost to then have that animal recover and to reach either an optimal slaughter weight or to reach that railing weight isn't as high as an animal that's diagnosed with something very early in the feeding period. So on that really high end, where we're getting north of $1,500 per animal for them to reach that finishing weight, that's often seen in those ptotic necrosis cases that are diagnosed really early days on feed. And then you have, in some cases, you've got a 500-pound calf that has that diagnosis, maybe within the first 50 days on feed. And then you're spending that whole time that that animal remains in the chronic pen and retreatments and all of the things that factor into that, attempting to get that animal to that optimal slaughter weight or to that minimum railing weight. And so that's where those numbers can become really inflated. And that's where lameness can really become a huge economic issue and huge welfare issue that often gets overlooked.
So, kind of from that story that you just told about these numbers, and we put the caveat in there that it is Western Canadian country and just completely different industries, right? Maybe not completely different, maybe a little dramatic on my end, but kind of some differences there between what we're doing in different parts of not even Canada, but even as we kind of venture down into the United States of what we're doing with these calves. And you mentioned these numbers and kind of the story that I took away from it. And I will kind of throw it back to you to see if I'm totally in left field on this, but kind of the story that I captured from you is that it really matters getting that proper diagnosis right away. So you mentioned those toe tip necrosis calves. We're going to be treating them for a while in hopes that we can get them heavy enough to get on a truck and make their way to a packing house or to the kind of the final harvest there. And if we're treating toe tip necrosis as if it's foot rot, that definitely doesn't help our case any more than what we're already fighting with. So I think kind of what I'm hearing is that just getting that proper diagnosis as soon as we can seems to be kind of maybe one of the things that's impacting that economic factor the most.
I would completely agree. And that's the discussion that we often find ourselves in, both within, industry professionals and with talking with clients and everything. Like, that differential diagnosis is absolutely biggest thing that plays into this. And it's really hard because, as you said, right? Like the knee-jerk reaction is to say, oh, it's a foot rot case and, get them in, treat them and send them on their way. But there's so many factors that can play into these lameness diseases. And that's where it becomes really difficult because we're dealing with all kinds of different things in terms of pen conditions. We're dealing with differences, as we talked previously about the differences in sex and how, steers versus heifers can be impacted differently, the things that are associated with days on feed. And so much of what can, make or break the ability to diagnose these diseases and then effectively treat them is just simply having the crews, up to speed on how to identify them and what to look for. And like you said, having those things in the back of your mind, like, oh, this is a really early days on feed animal. Maybe I shouldn't be looking for a laminitis case in this animal. When it comes to some of the risk factors, I mentioned that pen conditions can play a role. And so that becomes, anywhere that deals with the heavy winter and freeze thaw throughout the spring, or late winter and early spring months, that can be a really big risk factor for foot rot, but it can also be a big risk factor for digital dermatitis. So those kind of things become something else to factor into. And the unfortunate part is that anytime we start looking at, our best ways to manage these diseases and our best ways to mitigate, how they're going to impact the feedlot, it just adds more and more to the day-to-day requirements that the feedlot crews have to do. So keeping pen conditions really clean when you're dealing with that freeze-thaw cycle in the late winter or early spring can be really challenging. And so we often do see increasing case numbers for foot rot and DD during that time simply because the pen conditions are propagating it and the crews can't keep up. So that becomes an additional layer of challenge. And when the differential diagnosis is added in on top of that, it can be quite messy.
I just find it so intriguing that there's so many kind of, different avenues that all contribute to the same issue that we're facing. And you mentioned pen conditions, and unfortunately, I'm so sad to admit this, but this will probably be the last question we have time for today. So we'll kind of run through this one and pick your brain on this part. But you kind of mentioned, you didn't kind of, you did mention that pen conditions do kind of play into some of these foot issues that we see. And we all know and have experienced it that facility and facility design is going to be a pinch point when it comes to that proper treatment and prevention of foot issues. Mentioned very early on in this episode about the winch system, putting that on a chute or having some way that we can actually pick up feet and look at them while keeping ourselves safe. And if you don't have that, maybe some treatment or diagnosis might suffer, or having concrete floors that are too rough and they start abrading at those feet, those type of things. So those facilities are going to be kind of that major pinch point that we're looking at. But what are some big things that come to your mind that we can talk about in terms of facility or facility design, in terms of helping out with either the incidences of these foot diseases and these illnesses, or even just simple treatment things that we can think about in our facility design?
So as you mentioned, some of those rough surfaces, especially within in the processing facilities, can be a risk factor for toe-tip necrosis syndrome. And so providing a soft layer, like even it can be shavings or manure, something that provides a layer on top of the concrete, especially when the animals are exiting the chute, because that's when they tend to kind of jump forward out of the chute. And this is where temperament can also play a role in that as well. So if you have really flighty animals, that can make it even worse. So having that softer layer as they're exiting the chute can help with that and prevents that sliding on the feet as they're exiting. When it comes to the pen conditions themselves, I mean, obviously trying to keep the pens as clean as we possibly can isn't always the easiest thing to do. But it is one of our best practices in terms of mitigating foot rot and digital dermatitis. And so we are able to do things like mounding the soil, providing that, those mounds provide a nice dry bedding area, provides an area where the animals can get up and out of the mud. And they do actually treat it as a bit of a Penn enrichment thing too. There's nothing funnier than seeing a big old steer rubbing his head in a mound of dirt and having the time of his life. So those things are really good as well. When it comes to attempting to reduce the amount of disease that's present in the feedlot, environmental persistency is an important thing to think about. And so this is especially important for digital dermatitis, and it is something that can stay in the pen environment even after the animals that have been affected with it have been removed from that pen. So if and when possible, if feedlot crews can completely scrape a pen clean and then leave it empty for at least 1 or 2 weeks, preferably if it's able to be completely dried out, which obviously that's going to be weather dependent. But if that pen's able to stay empty and dry for a period of 1 to 2 weeks, that's where we start really seeing improvements with the amount of environmental persistency that is there with digital dermatitis. Obviously, depending on the production system and the fact that, generally speaking, an empty pen is not a good thing. That's not always the easiest thing to do, but that is something that we can try in cases where we have a lot of outbreaks of DD occurring.
The one thing that you mentioned that I just couldn't help but giggle. The whole kind of facility talk that you just gave is very relevant. But the one thing that made me giggle is, you're putting these you're piling up this dirt and to make these mounds. And I always equate feedlot steers to toddlers. You give them this very simple task, and they just have so much fun rubbing their heads on everything or just jumping and kicking when their pen changes a little bit and just get so excited in that. It's rewarding to see, but also knowing that it's helping kind of in these foot related things as well is just, icing on the cake to watch that happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree.
So, unfortunately, we're ha gonna have to close this episode for now, but I'm hopeful that depending on how our schedules align, that we can stay in touch throughout, the next several months and even further than that, because I think I could keep talking forever with you, Sarah. It's always a joy to have you with us. This is, I believe almost the third time that you've talked to with us for I-29 Moo University, and it's always. I always learn something new or kind of take away something else from you. So I hope our listeners can do the same and take advantage of the information you have shared with us and utilize it in their operations and even in their daily life of what they're out there doing in the world with our fed cattle and especially even some dairy crosses as well as they kind of enter more into the fed cattle industry. I do want to thank you, Sarah, for joining me on this podcast and to the listeners who tuned in. Unfortunately, like I said earlier, our time on this episode is coming to a close, and this has been I-29 Moo University's podcast. I am your host, Madison Kavarna from South Dakota State University Extension. Until next time.
We'd like to thank our annual sponsors, including our gold sponsor, Iowa Corn Growers Association. Please visit their website at iowacorn.org. We'd also like to thank our silver sponsors, Pioneer, Connor Agri Service, Diamond V, and Central Vet Clinic. I-29 Moo University is an equal opportunity educator. For the full discrimination statement, visit extension.iastate.edu/diversity/ext.